When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is High Level Wisdom for New Generation Leaders. We interview senior level baby boomers who share their stories, insights, and how-tos for the emerging leadership of millennials. Our mission is to celebrate their accomplishments and aid in preserving their business knowledge. I'm your host, Chris Williams.
Hey, and welcome to another episode of High Level Wisdom for New Generation Leaders. As you know, every single week we have done some incredible things. Season 2 is here. We are taking it up another notch. You are learning from even more people. We got some great surprises coming up this season. So without further ado, let me tell you about a company called CFO Systems. Well, this system and this company is pretty unique because they focus on timeshare leadership for the middle market. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you know that you need a CFO or a controller or HR directors, this company has some of the best and brightest talent. They right now have 35 different directors serving 110 clients, and they are a fast growing company, but more importantly, they're effective for companies like yours. I am talking about CFO Systems, and I've had the privilege of interviewing the CEO, Brett Frevert. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Brett, because he's a very interesting person. And more importantly, he really feels passionate about the knowledge gap between millennials and baby boomers and what should happen. He has very interesting insights. So I want you to listen to my interview, episode 32, with Brett Frevert, the CEO of CFO Systems. Take a listen.
How are you, Brett?
Doing well. Good morning, Chris. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So, Brett, what I would like to do is, if you don't mind, feel free to share with the audience a little bit about your background, your company, what it is that you do. And what I would like to do is, once you do that, I would love if you would be willing to not only just do that, but then, you know, let's kind of talk about and give our audience a little bit of background and history and just some understanding about not only just your company, kind of where you came from, but more importantly, I would like for everybody to be able to truly understand kind of where not only you've come from, but, you know, what was your experience like going through corporate America and then one day deciding, you know what, I think this is going to be something that I'm going to venture out to do. And, you know, one day being able to, you know, run my own company, and then eventually you were able to do it. And I just think it's a great thing, and it's an awesome thing. So feel free to just share your background.
You bet. Thanks, Chris. So my background, my career, my resume starts pretty typically, fairly traditional accounting student in middle America. I joined what at that time was the Big Eight. I joined the Deloitte organization in the mid-80s, and I was very, very fortunate to have numerous good mentors, people that taught me well, led me well. Fortunately, I did have a work ethic deeply ingrained in me by my Depression-era grandmother. At Deloitte, I had phenomenal clients. I worked with Fortune 100s. I worked with small nonprofits and a wide range in between. So I spent 7 years at Deloitte working with people, organizations like Berkshire Hathaway, ConAgra, IBP, and also the local Girl Scouts Council and a number of insurance companies. So after 7 years, I took the fairly traditional route of the big audit, big four auditor, and joined a client of mine. I was going through some serious transition. I became the joined the accounting department during an IPO process. We went through an IPO, a demutualization. We did a tremendous, had a tremendous run of M&A, doing a lot of the smaller company roll-ups, and then switched the other side of the desk and sold ourselves into a larger organization, which then put me out on the job market, and I joined a company called First Data, which actually processes the vast majority of the credit card transactions across America and a lot of the world. First Data, same thing. I was able to somehow be identified as worthy of a mentor, and of all things, the CEO of the organization was also a Deloitte alum. He somewhat took me under his wing. I was only there for a couple of short years, but he took me under his wing, did some phenomenal mentoring, tapped me as the guy to go to Europe for an interim stint, take the position as CFO of First Data Europe during year-end audit process, budget planning, forecast process, as well as interviewing and helping to recruit and interview and find my replacement over there, which really started laying some of the groundwork for where CFO Systems operate now. After that, I stepped into a true full-time CFO position, also very, very key in that this last job that I had back in 2003-2004 was a smaller $20 million, 50-employee real estate organization that was in stress. And after 6 or 9 months, we really had a lot under control, and they just didn't need a full-time CFO, which really helped me crystallize, okay, there's a real need out here for true CFO leadership in these middle market, lower middle market organizations, those 20, 30, 40 million dollar organizations. And since this was spring, summer of 2004, there wasn't really such a service out there. So I did the very traditional approach. I went through the interview process, got a number of job offers. Everyone was pretty much the same. Phenomenal organization, work elbow to elbow with the founder, leader, the entrepreneur. And as it was described, really dig into the details. And when I pursue that, what does that mean? The answer is, well, you know, you work with the founder, the CEO, you're the CFO, you work with the investors, with the private equity groups, with the bankers, but you also have to do payroll and accounts payable and general ledger entries and reconciliations. And I thought, you know what, there's a lot cheaper way, a lot more cost-effective way to do that. And frankly, I don't really want to do payroll and accounts payable and bank recs anymore. That was something I did early on. So I politely declined the offers, parted ways with the real estate company, hung out my shingle, and went out to tell the market that I was launching a new service, timeshare CFO. And got a lot of head scratches, a lot of sideways glances, a lot of pats on the back with assurance that, well, that might work pretty well until you get a job. And being maybe somewhat stubborn, some would describe, but also just I knew that there was a real need out there. I had seen it. I had lived it in the real estate company. I had seen it through the interviews. I could go back to my public accounting days, and I knew that there were a lot of these smaller organizations that could really benefit from a true CFO, but in no way did they need a full-time CFO. No way did they need could they afford a full-time CFO, true CFO. So I stuck to my guns. It actually took about 2 weeks before I got my first client, about 6 weeks when a banker friend referred in one of his clients. And within 3 months, I was up to a team of two with three clients. And by the end of our first year, we had a team of three and about eight clients. And it just continued to grow from there. Now we're to a team of 35 across the greater Midwest from the Mississippi to the Rockies. We also have just expanded into the New York metro area. We'll be expanding into the West Coast this spring. And the market is there. The other thing that has helped us a lot is there are CFO type of organizations in nearly every metro market. So what we do now with our 35 people, we've got about 110 clients. We provide what we call timeshare leadership. We provide the CFOs, the controllers, the HR directors to those same clients that I saw and interviewed with 13 years ago. Somebody that has started an organization, built it to beyond the small business, but truly to that middle market, lower middle market, somebody that might have 10 to 20 to 200 employees, somebody that might have 10 to 20 to 500 million in revenue, and they would truly benefit from some professional leadership, but they really don't need it all day, every day. And they have a good team, a good accounting team, possibly a good HR team, but they really need that leadership. The advantage to the people on the team is, much as I was cringing in 2004 going through the interviews, the people on our team can be a CFO all day, every day, 5 or 6 days a week, and they can work with 3 or 4 or 5 different companies. They can see a variety of industries. As we say, we work with everything from daycare to cattle feeders, construction companies, manufacturing, any industry across the Midwest. We've got some experience, some expertise in, and we like our team to see a variety. And that's CFO Systems in a nutshell.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what's fascinating
you're
about
there, Chris?
Yes, absolutely. So what's really fascinating about your journey and how you've gotten to where you've gotten as I listen to kind of how you've made the pivot and the shift is at some point you kind of noticed a need, as you said, that, you know, you could see that some of these, you know, smaller to mid-sized companies could really use a CFO. They could really leverage, you know, the expertise and the knowledge of how to truly be able to sit in that particular space. So I'm interested when you noticed that there was that need that was sitting there and you felt like, you know what, I could really, you know, help other people and companies fulfill that need. What was kind of the bright spot moment that you had that you said, you know what, I think I found kind of how we can service clients and what the niche is for us. What was that for you?
That's a heck of a good question. I don't know that there was any one great aha moment. I mean, keep in mind and visualize me back in 2003, 2004. I'm a young corporate CPA, controller, CFO, making pretty darn good money, 4 young kids, And I just had that fire in my belly, that distaste in my mouth. I don't want to go be an employee again. Part of what I had done the past several years, the last several years of my employee career, was move from position to position, always in an effort to or with an opportunity to clean something up, to make it better, to build something and hand it off. And that's what I really enjoyed. And so as I was sitting in that summer of 2004 and pondering, what kind of job do I really want? Do I really want a job? Do I really have the courage to say no thanks? And do I have the confidence in my idea to really launch something new and completely different? And, oh boy, what if it doesn't work? And so, you know, those last couple of days, that first week or two of being on my own, so to speak, sitting in the office above my garage, banging out emails, describing this new and unheard of service to people that I knew, people that knew me, people that had worked with me, hired me, referred me in years past, to describe this something completely new and different to them took some serious, many serious gut checks. And the first big aha, that, or the big relief, I guess, would be 2 weeks into it when a friend of mine hired me, engaged me to build a 5-year forecast for his company. He called and he said, "You know what? We need a forecast. Are you very good at this?" And I said, "Actually, it's one of my real strengths is to build some good flexible models." And so I picked up that first client and somehow had the knowledge that, okay, I can't focus entirely on this one. I need to keep fishing, if you will. I've landed one, and I need to make sure I get it handled properly. But there's got to be another one, because this is not long-lived. This is a fairly short project. And then when the banker brought his medical client to me, and I could see that, okay, this too isn't a terribly hard problem, and we can get through it fairly quickly. And probably the big deep sigh of relief was when a lawyer friend brought his financial client to us, or to me. There was an equipment leasing company here in Nebraska that was under some stress, and a lawyer friend brought it to me, and it became really that landmark client that, okay, here's something that will take 50 to 60% of my time. It'll cover the overhead, cover the bills, put food on the table, and give me that base to go out and build a business. That was probably the biggest one. And then I still had those misgivings and doubts creeping in at night in a hotel in a small town in middle Nebraska of, okay, what am I doing here? Is this really going to work? Geez, I was, by most counts, I was on the good track to corporate leadership, and here I am, again, 4 young kids sitting at home, and I'm out following a dream. Does this really make sense? And there were plenty of recruiters calling, plenty of other job opportunities, and I just had to keep following the dream, turn over to a higher power, and more clients just kept coming in the door. And that was really, that probably, Chris, as much as anything, might have been the real aha moment that spring and summer of 2005 when people just kept bringing their clients, and they'd say, "Hey, you know what? I think Brett can help you. Hey, you know what? You need to talk to these guys. Hey, you know what? Yeah. I know a guy." And that was probably, as I think through it, that was probably the real aha moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you know more than most that sometimes the confidence comes from the repeat and the new business. When someone can say that, "Yep, I need it. I'm willing to pay for it." And so that's really, really great. So the great thing about what you've been able to do is you've been able to persevere, and you've been able to take something from concept all the way through and actually build a business. So I know that in 2016, you've been able to build your company to hit the Fortune 5000. You've been able to do in revenue about $4.6 million. So here's my question. I'm interested in learning, as you've been building not only your company, but you've not only built the company, you built a family, you've been able to see kind of the trends that are happening in the workspace. Share with me and our audience, how do you see the millennials, especially that 25 to 35 age group of millennials, how do you see the impacts that it's had on even your industry? And more importantly, I think what I'm intrigued by based on the company that you've built is, when did you first start to notice that something was a little different in the work environment? And it was what the millennial was
when
bringing.
When did I start to notice the difference in the work environment? You know, Chris, I'm in a little bit, everybody probably says this, but I'm in a little bit different situation in that I was born in the fall of 62, so I was right at the tail end of the baby boomers, right at the very early, maybe just before the millennials. I had a strong influence from my Depression-era grandmother that told me probably every week about the of what it was like before and after the Depression and the struggles and the sacrifices and the hard work. And yet I was able to make a good career, partly by working super hard for the very stereotypical baby boomers in public accounting and corporate headquarters. Then fast forward, and I've got a couple of my two oldest daughters are right smack dab in the middle of the millennial time frame. My oldest is 27. My second one is 24. And I watch them and I read the millennial articles and I look at my daughters and I think, well, they act a lot more like baby boomers than they do millennials. And so one thing I've seen personally is we can't really stereotype an entire generation, much like we can't really stereotype and generalize an entire population of any sort. And that's probably been one of the things that I've seen as much as anything is we can take millennials at baby boomers on an individual by individual basis, and there are traits, the generalization traits coming from each. And at the same time now, and keep in mind, we build not only CFO systems, but we've built dozens upon dozens of client companies. So we have an advantage of seeing not only those in our firm, but those in our clients' firms. And we do see a lot of this stereotype. We see the baby boomers and hear the conversations of, yeah, no, I don't want to come in early for that meeting. No, I don't really want to do that. Why would we do that? Couldn't we do it a different way? You know what?
Right.
This might be a better, faster way to do it. And the interesting thing for me has been how many billions of dollars have corporations paid over these past 30 years to get feedback like that, similar to that, from the consultants. I mean, go to any of the top 10, top 20 consulting firms. They've billed billions of dollars to get people to tell them, well, here's something you shouldn't really be doing. Here's tasks that don't need to be done. Here's a way
That's
to
a
do it
point.
Better.
That's a great
and now,
point.
And now we suddenly have these young, energetic, well-educated, super intelligent people in here on our payroll telling us the same thing for a fraction of the cost, and you have these baby boomers complaining and saying, those doggone millennials, they don't want to do this. They don't want to just buckle down and do grunt work. And it's not clicking with the baby boomer management and executives that for a fraction of the price, you're getting a lot of the same advice you were paying these consultants for these last 30 years.
Now that is an interesting perspective, Brett. So I'm interested because that gets us to another point that I hear a lot of people making on both sides. I hear millennials say this and I hear baby boomers say this, but it's this two word thing that we're always providing a perspective about, and that's hard work. Baby boomers have a very different opinion of what hard work looks like. A millennial will tell you what their version of hard work looks like. Brett, I'm interested. Has your definition of hard work changed the longer you've been in a seat of influence and you've seen both sides of kind of the table? What does that definition look like to you? And do you feel like there's room for the version of what the millennial says hard work is?
The answer to the second question is there room for the version that the millennial has of hard work is absolutely yes. Again, what I've seen, the definition of hard work 20 years ago, 30 years ago was put on your coat, your tie, come into the office. Even if there's nothing to do, you got to come in, you got to sit there, you got to grind it out. You know, we and especially again in big public accounting, we took it at a, as a badge of honor that we work 70 hours a week and we got stuff done that was really hard. And there are corporations that that also wore it as a badge of courage. That, by gosh, their people work 5.5 days a week, and whether there was anything to do on Saturday or whether you missed kids' soccer games and what have you. And so you look at that and you say, okay, that really wasn't all that healthy. And now you look at the millennials and actually some of the Gen X folks too and say, hard work can really start prior to the task, if you will. Hard work should start with, okay, what are we trying to do here? Not what are we trying to how are we trying to do it, but what are we trying to accomplish? What's the end goal of this project, this task, this even as something as seemingly menial as paying bills? So what's the goal of an accounts payable department? Well, it's to document, it's to process, it's to, you know, it's to make it hard, it's to satisfy the auditors. You can only imagine how many billions of dollars are wasted in corporate America in a misguided effort to, quote, satisfy the auditors.
Wow.
Whereas a millennial mindset will be, wait a minute, all we're trying to do, and this is oversimplification, but all we're trying to do is get product in the door and pay the people that provided it. And if I can do that in 60 seconds, do I really need to spend 5 minutes on it? If I can handle all of these through an automated system, and look, I even know how to build it for you. Why would you expect me to spend 45 hours a week doing this if I could do it in 7? Because what I see out there in clients now is somewhat the, you know, I'm probably in as much of a mood to talk about the problems with the baby boomer generation and the unwillingness of that traditional stereotypical baby boomer controller when perhaps I and a millennial will say, all right, let's take a look at the AP process. Why do we do it this way? And the controller might say, how many accounting departments do you know that don't do it this way? You know, we have to make it hard. It's accounting. It's the auditors. No, no, no. There really is a much better, often safer way to do it than the way you did it in 1992. So I see the millennials really creating, again, I go back to that early conversation, the millennials are really creating the efficiency, the streamlining, the fresh new ideas that corporate America has paid billions for in the past.
And you know, that is something that I really think, Brett, we could stand to learn from. I think all of us, no matter what generation you come from, but I do think, I love how you said that there are efficiencies that, you know, that are being brought to the table and ideas. I also believe that, and I'm sure you've seen this in your world. I've seen it before as not only just an employee, but as an employer in doing any venture that I've ever stepped out to do. There are people who, if we can just be honest, they're successful at making things difficult. and I think that there's a lot of churn in money in that. And it's not necessarily a stereotypical thing of someone who is stuck in their ways and who just doesn't want to change. I think sometimes it takes a few brave souls who are willing to say, hey, that's not the best way anymore. And just because that's the way it is, doesn't mean we have to keep doing it that way. And so you mentioned the idea about the
the baby boomers who might be in senior leadership at this time, no matter what the company is, no matter how large the company is, who may be a bit resistant to that change, or I won't even say the change. I think it's more so, to your point, a resistant to the ideas coming from someone younger than them, much younger, even probably potentially their child's age, younger than them, right? So I'm interested in your perspective on how would you suggest a CFO, a CTO, a CEO, a leadership team begin to break that stereotype, maybe, or even that pattern in their own lives, to be able to be open to ideas from a younger emerging audience inside of their own companies?
You know, that may be our golden ticket of the next 10 years, Chris, if we figure that one out. My thought would be that those of us in the management seats, in the executive seats, really need to step back, be somewhat humble, show some respect. You know, the kids, I'll use a poor phrase, poor sounding phrase, but the kids, the millennials that have the energy and have the ideas, what would it look like if we were to sit in the chair and put them up at the wall, at the whiteboard, and say, okay, tell me what you're thinking. Show me. How would that work? And ask open-ended, I want to learn type of questions, and instead of the, well, no, that wouldn't work. Listen, you got to know how, you need to understand how we've always done it. And if we were to physically, psychologically, mentally put ourselves back into the classroom, if you will, put us back into the student seat and think about, and it, maybe it sounds corny, but think about what it was like when we were 23 and coming out of school. We didn't just naturally learn, or we didn't just naturally know, look, you got to put your head down, you got to bang the 10 key for 12, 13 hours a day, you got to write stuff down, you got to erase it. You know, somebody taught us how to do it, what at that time was probably a pretty decent way. And now the interesting thing is, instead of being the teacher or the professor or the person at the front of the room teaching the young students how to do it, we probably need to put ourselves back into that student role and say, all right, you got a lot of ideas, show me. Well, let's walk through it, because it seems like what it could do, one, you end up with a different process, a much better process, hopefully much more efficient. Secondly, you really, one of your later questions, we're going to talk about developing leaders. Think of what that does to the millennial or any worker, anybody, to their confidence and their ability, their professional development. Say, okay, I've got the CEO, the controller, the CFO, I've got the executive team here, I've got my AP manager, and they want me to stand up and show them, tell them how we could do this so much better. That takes a lot of courage, but also a lot of, it'll provide a lot of professional development to that person. And again, I look at it maybe somewhat frugally or cynically, I think, all right, we're spending billions of dollars on training and development and what have you on the younger workers. Why don't we just let them stand up and teach us old dogs new tricks and develop them that way? No. Wouldn't that be so much more efficient?
You know, and I believe that we are probably having, some people are probably having those questions, and probably, you know, looking for those answers. But, you know, I think also, Brett, on the other side of that, somebody may say, well, you know, that sounds great, but we don't have any room for failure. We can't afford to just allow
inexperienced to lead us. What would you say to that?
Well, I'd say a couple of things. One, everybody has room for failure. Success is not guaranteed no matter what you do. There's always an opportunity for failure. And secondly, I would say that comment, that thought process probably illustrates a lot of the issue, the challenge that we don't have room for failure. And which kind of then is the unspoken version of, look, we can't let these young people be in charge and making decisions because we're going to fail. It takes a grizzled, old, experienced old baby boomer to make the right decisions. Now, I will also point out that what I did not say is give them the keys, turn over the keys to the kingdom and say, tell me what you're going to do. It was
right.
stand up here and tell me your idea. Explain to me what your idea is, what your recommendation is, how we would go about it, what are the challenges we would run into, what would, you know, and let's go ahead and create together or explain to us your project plan. And guess what? I am still the CFO, the CEO, the AP manager, whatever the title may be, but by gosh, I know that in 5 years, there's going to be this many fewer, 10, 20% fewer workers. And if the company continues to grow, we're going to be processing 50% more invoices. How am I going to do this? You, get up here, tell me how.
Well, that wraps up another great episode, episode 32 of High Level Wisdom for New Generation Leaders. Listen, Brett shared some really interesting insights, and his journey is incredible. The company's journey is incredible. More importantly, he is an incredible person. And as you know, this is only part one, but you will get part two in 2 days as usual. Now, this is season two, so we're kicking it up a notch. I want you to help us continue to spread the word. Whether you're a CEO who enjoys the content of what we're doing, or whether you're a millennial in your career and you're looking to go to the next level, help us share this with other folks. You can do that very simply through social media. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at High Level Wisdom, or you can simply share our website with folks, highlevelwisdom.com. Very, very simple. Also, keep in mind that coming up in the next episode, you're going to hear some more insights from Brett, breaking down and kind of decoding this whole millennial and relationship and career and moving forward. But I also want you to pay attention to how he sees millennials continuing to be able to take even roles that he even offers to companies just like yours, becoming the next CFO or the controller or HR directors in your companies, and what you can do to play a part. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'll catch you in the next episode. Now, CEOs and HR directors, I want you to listen up. You know what it's like to be able to try to scale your business and take it to the next level. And sometimes you're looking for the great fit of a CFO. Well, there's a company that can help you do that, and not only do that, but be able to ensure that they help you with their simple model of providing the level and quality of financial leadership you need. CFO Systems provides leadership to middle market companies and small businesses throughout North America. They serve the clients and interim and timeshare CFOs, controllers, and HR directors, providing expertise and experience you need on your schedule. Visit CFOSystemsLLC.com. That's CFOSystemsLLC.com. Hey, as a leader, you know how important it is to think about the future. But is your executive leadership team so focused on the present that it's hard to even think beyond the next 6 months? Well, insert Serendipity Interactive. We bring strategy to life by helping executives make fortunate discoveries for their business by focusing on the future while they maintain their present. If you're ready to make your own fortunate discovery today, visit serendipityinteractive.com. That's serendipityinteractive.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.